Today's show, we tell some stories about Bob Knight, get into more Harbaugh, Connor Stallions, Big Ten coaches, pick some games, and why is the CBS-SEC partnership ending?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The note was going to be Bob Knight about to punch me in nose, right?
Russ Dellinger.
Beware of a glasses-wearing, hat-wearing, mustachioed man. So he might pop up behind your bed, in your closet. Connor Stallions.
And SI's Pat Forte.
It hit me profoundly. And you just start thinking, there's nobody that's really been like this, and there's never going to be anybody like this again.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And this is the College Football Inquirer, but it's really a college sports podcast. We talk about all sorts of stuff. It's not easy to become the main topic of a college football podcast, though, right here into, what are we going into, week 9, 10, 10?
Yeah, November 2nd, it's prime football time.
But yes. Bob Knight passes away, that's how it's going to be. 902 victories at Army, Indiana, Texas Tech, won 3 national titles as a basketball coach, obviously, delivered the last perfect season all the way back in 1976. Hasn't been anything since. The principles of man-to-man defense and motion offense reverberate to this day. So many coaches from, you know, fifth grade, like rec league, all the way to the NBA, followed the way he did things, coached, massively influential in the coaching profession. I would say society at large. There was an ethos that his teams, that people believed in, that you know the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and you put the team together and we can accomplish anything. And it's that transforms into business and all that. He certainly didn't invent that, but there were many people in this country, particularly for a long time when he was really rolling, that embraced what he was saying as the gospel of Bob Knight. And then there was the absolute outlandish, outrageous bullying behavior that he could display. I thought Pat had a great line. He wasn't complicated. He was human, and in a lot of ways more human than others. I think that'd be it, Pat. Was that what you said in your column on SI?
Yeah, more or less. I said there was more intensity to his humanity, I guess, you know, on both extremes. Yeah.
He could be the most charismatic and charming guy you ever met. He could be the most difficult and kind of regrettable too. And it was all there. And I don't know anybody in his life that had a perfect relationship with him that didn't see both sides. And yeah, he did it to the utter extreme. He enjoyed the power that he had. But then at other times he could be incredibly generous. It just was a very unique thing. Pat, your thoughts, Ross, will get to you too, but I don't think you ever covered him, Ross, but you certainly, everybody in this country grew up, at least at a certain age, knowing about Bob Knight. I mean, the guy embraced his like anger. He was in like commercials or like send the pizza back, or like he was in anger management with like Adam Sandler, you know, I mean, but Pat, you covered him a lot when you were at the Courier Journal in Louisville. You were in that area of the country. Courier Journal was big in Southern Indiana. What were your thoughts Wednesday night when it was announced that Bob Knight had passed away?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it hit me profoundly, and you just start thinking, there's nobody that's really been like this, and there's never going to be anybody like this again. There definitely will never be another one like him. And it did go back, really when it hit me profoundly was when they had the welcome back and goodbye, basically, for him at Assembly Hall in 2020, when he came out and, you know, he finally came back, he buried the eternal hatchet that he had with the school that fired him and where he had his greatest success and where he became a great, you know, figure in the state. And when he walked out and he was so diminished, that's when it was like, oh man, okay. And I, you know, I did not have a very good professional relationship with Bob Knight at all. But at that point, you know, it's one like you see a frail human being. And I think I felt very strangely moved to pity, which was never an emotion I would ever consider with Bob Knight. And, you know, it was a good reminder, like, you can't go carrying around grudges and bitterness and anger with you because it's just not good for you. And, you know, looking at him and look him with the people there, it was a very profound moment. Anyway, the thing that struck me covering him, I lived in Southern Indiana for a while. My first job as a big boy reporter was covering high schools in Southern Indiana. So I had 90 schools or 120 or something in the southern third of the state to cover. And that is prime Bob Knight territory. Those people worshipped him. And I said in the column that to a degree, for some of them, he was a way of life. He was an uncompromising believer in his principles. And they looked at him as basically, society is going to hell, but Bob Knight isn't. He won't let the societal decay happen. I mean, it was truly like profoundly sociological to a degree, and fascinating to see the extent to which people kind of rallied to him as a last kind of island in a sea that was encroaching on them almost. And, forgetting the basketball part of it, but the reverence that people had for him, you know, I covered the guys that went to school there. I covered him in high school. Mr. Basketball 1989, Pat Graham, maybe the best pure shooter I've ever seen. Mr. Basketball 1990, Damon Bailey, you know, famous folk hero by the time he's in ninth grade. For those guys, like, they wanted to be Mr. Basketball. They wanted to win a state title, but they mostly wanted to put on those candy cane warm-up pants and run out there and play Bob Knight's motion offense and play Bob Knight's man-to-man defense. That was their, like, reason for living. And that's how it was for a lot of players in that state. So you just don't – you see a lot of impactful coaches. I just don't think you see one with quite that outsized an impact like Bob Knight.
When I was younger, I read Season on the Brink. It was probably one of the first like sports books that I ever read. And so I kind of followed and knew at a pretty young age. For someone who didn't watch a ton of basketball, though, knew a lot about Bob Knight. And really, from my vantage point, I didn't ever really know the, you know, championship winning Indiana coach Bob Knight. I only kind of knew the Texas Tech, always seemingly in some kind of trouble Bob Knight, right? in the news and in the headlines for something pretty wild or crazy, or and so that's kind of the guy that I knew. I found there's obviously a lot of videos circulating on social media last night after his passing. And one of them I watched several of them, but one of them really just had me in stitches laughing. Cause he's a great storyteller. He's a great orator and storyteller. And he was telling the story of, I think he was coaching the US Olympic team in the 80s, over in Spain or playing Spain. Maybe they were playing Spain. The US was playing Spain and Michael Jordan was on the team. And the team was up like 30 points at halftime. And they were playing, he said they played flawless basketball, like perfect basketball. And Jordan had, I think, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, and 12 points, or 11 rebounds, 9 assists, and maybe 19 points in 12 minutes of basketball in the first half. And he's walking into the halftime locker room, Bob Knight is, and he looks up at the clock, he looks at the stat sheet. He's trying to find something to yell at the team about at halftime. I mean, but it's perfect. Everything's perfect. So he opens the the locker room door. The first thing he sees is Jordan sitting on the bench. And he said, you know, I'm gonna get at Jordan, and everybody in the room's gonna see, man, Bob Knight's coach is yelling at Jordan. Oh boy, we're in for it, because he's played perfectly. And Bob Knight said, Jordan, you hadn't set a damn screen yet. When are you gonna start setting screens? And I think the story ends basically with Jordan said, Coach, you say I'm the quickest player you've ever seen. And Bob said, you know, yeah. And he said, Coach, I think I'm setting those screens quicker than you can see them. Yeah, just amazing story. Oh. Just amazing. And then I think Bob Knight's comeback was, well, slow it down so I can see him. Right, right. It's just unbelievable. So that's a great story.
The idea that Bob Knight and Michael Jordan conversed, right? Like, it's like something out of the, like, biblical times, right? Like, oh my God, these two, like, historic, like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, that is a great, that guy could hold court with the best of them. And then he could be absolutely the worst person. Like I said,
yes.
Interesting thing about that team, because he got to coach. I didn't know him when he was championship coach either, because I think his last one was 87. They were relevant, though. And I covered, Pat and I know, covered like how big basketball was in Indiana back then is just insane. The Colts were just getting going. You and I know, Pat, covered a Kentucky and Indiana used to play at the Hoosier Dome. It'd be 50,000 people there.
Yeah, for a one game. One basketball game.
Yeah. Kentucky versus, it was Rick Pitino on one side, Bob Knight on the other, 50,000 people in the old Hoosier Dome. Like, holy cow. One game.
Yeah.
Sold out. Damon Bailey, who is probably the most famous from that area that Pat was talking about, Southern Indiana, who Knight, like, gave the, like, this is like, this is like a eighth grader now getting 10 million followers because of a 360 dunk on Instagram or TikTok or something. He said in Season on a Brink, Damon Bailey's better than the guards we have now. The state went crazy. He used to sell out every game in high school because people wanted to go see this phenom that was like, Damon Bailey had to go to Indiana at that point. He played his state final game. They won the state final as a senior in front of 41,000 people.
That's correct.
At a high school basketball game, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, he had this way of, I'm going to coach basketball a certain way. It is the right way. Bob Knight was always the right way. My way is the right way. Everything else is stupid. Anyone who questions me, stupid. All that. You talk about him coaching Jordan, and I wish he had gotten a chance to coach more Michael Jordan's. Wouldn't we all like to? I could have done pretty well with Michael Jordan as my coach. But I always found he loved that 84 Olympic experience because he got to coach truly great players. He had lots of very good players. The most telling fact about Bob Knight and how good of a coach he was in his entire career. He won three titles. He was the winningest coach for a long time. He coached one guy who ever became an NBA All-Star. Isaiah Thomas for 2 years. Nothing against Mike Krzyzewski or John Wooden or Dean Smith. Your job is to get those guys. Right. Okay. Like, the job is go get these guys. You're supposed to have a million. John Calipari, right? I want half the NBA All-Star game to be Kentucky guys. It's actually a pretty good strategy. I don't know if it's doable, but if you can do it, do it. It's a lot easier winning with Jordan. But the fact he won all those games and all he had was Isaiah for 2 years, amazing. You know.
Yeah. You know, to that point, and then, like, his last real great hurrah at Indiana was 91-92 when they went to the Final Four and they lost to Krzyzewski, whose team was repeating. And then the next year, 92-93, they might have won the title, except Alan Henderson got hurt late in the season. But to that point, Dan, what was going on? What else was going on in the Big Ten then? Fab Five.
Yep.
They were the absolute cultural polar opposite of Indiana and Bob Knight.
Yep.
I mean, like, you could not have two more different programs at that time. And the jokes were constant. You know, Indiana with their butter cut and shorts. Well, Michigan's got the cool, long, flowing shorts and the black socks and the shaved heads, and they're just stylistic opposites. Indiana beat them 3 out of 4 in those 2 years when the Fab Five was there in full. So, you know, and that, boy, people in Indiana love that. They felt like that was this, you know, cultural statement. I don't know that it was. I just think that they were both great basketball teams. But it was fascinating to watch exactly that team, certainly with less talent, but playing at such a high level together and playing the Knight way, you know, ferocious defense, screen, 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 motion, 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 pass, 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 layup. That was the thing.
Yeah, and then the antics became like almost comedy, right? Like, stuffed some fans heckling him. He picked him up and threw him in a garbage can.
Yeah, an LSU fan.
Yeah, LSU fan. Like, you know, guy, he was big. Knight was big guy. The outbursts, the media were always, I mean, it was terrifying. He went after Pat once, kind of.
He did.
He was going to go.
Sports Center.
Ooh,
yeah.
Do tell.
Sports Center, yeah. I ended the column that way with this anecdote, yeah. Were you there, Dan? You were.
I was.
There, were
I absolutely. Oh, were you really? Yeah. You did not back down.
I gotta hear this.
I will give him credit. Pat was going to stand his ground. I don't know what was going to happen, but Pat's.
I didn't know what was going to happen either.
Knight is a big dude, and what are you going to do? Punch Bob Knight? Like that's the end of your career. Might be the end of his too, but he's got more money.
Yeah, at that point, I had no.
Yeah, you had right. His mortgage is paid, man.
January 18th, 2000, Assembly Hall. Indiana was playing Iowa, and the backstory is a little convoluted, but let's just say that Knight is playing against Steve Alford, one of his all-time favorite and best players who helped get him the 1987 title. They've had a falling out, as everyone does with Bob Knight. Nobody doesn't have a falling out, but this one was fairly public, like Big Ten Media Day. They wouldn't talk to each other, so everybody's like, what the hell, you know? Steve Alford and Bob Knight won't talk to each other? So anyway, that was the buildup to this game. And Curry Kirkpatrick was at ESPN, and Knight hated Curry. And Curry was kind of a North Carolina guy. And anyway, Curry had done like a TV piece and maybe even a written piece as well, setting up the game and basically making Knight look like the person at fault here. And he probably was. But anyway, they play the game. Knight actually comes out of the visitor entrance over to the visitor bench, smacks Sam Alford, Steve's dad, on the back of the head playfully, shakes hands with him, kind of diffuses the whole pregame drama. They play the game. It's an excellent game. Indiana wins. I think it was like 74-71. Alford comes in, graciously says everything you would think he should say. You know, look, I have so much respect for Bob Knight. We will get through whatever's going on. We'll be fine. We'll talk about it later. No problem. You're like, oh, wow, this is a nice little happy story. Knight comes in, talks for a while. Kirkpatrick, I think, starts to ask him a question, and Knight just gets triggered and starts going off. I saw the you put on the air, Curry, bah, 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 bah. And he's getting madder and madder and madder, just yelling at Curry, and then everybody goes storming out of the room, storms back in, and oh, another damn thing. Oh, you son of a, just want to make a big deal about me, and I'm using the language that Knight's using. Make a big deal out of me not talking offer. Well, there's five other coaches at Big Ten Media Day I didn't talk to either. Why don't you say anything about that? And I just said very reflexively, I said, because you were sitting right next to him, coach. And said, where's the guy that asked that question? And I'm like, right here. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm holding my notepad and I'm taking notes, but I'm like, do I drop the pad and put him up? Because I honestly.
Put your fist up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The note was going to be Bob Knight about to punch me in nose, right?
Yeah. Knight is coming at me. Basically, he's advancing, screaming at me, and Pat Knight grabs him and pulls him out of the room.
Oh, my.
And the last thing Knight says as he's being pulled out of the room was, some of you people need to find a better way to live. That's Seth Davis was there. Every time I see Seth Davis, he asks me, have you found a better way to live?
Yeah. Well, he was right about that. That was it. Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, to understand the volatility, understand that his son, Pat, was there to make sure his dad didn't like it. Pat's a good friend of mine. But yeah, he was smart enough to know, like, we ain't just letting dad go in the old press conference without a little monitoring, right? A little this could go sideways. Everything could go sideways with him. He was terrifying to ask questions. It was a great Pat. 40 was, well, I saw it. He was willing to stand up. I'm glad that Pat Knight solved that problem because that
I am
was gonna
too.
Be, it's going to end bad for everybody.
I didn't want to take that charge.
No. Is there a video of this somewhere?
Yeah, it was on SportsCenter. And it did.
It doesn't show
I
you.
I think so. I think briefly. Briefly, like the cameras all swung my direction. I remember that. And I was like, that's when I knew it was trouble. Where's the guy that asked that question right here? And all of a sudden, like, eight cameras looked at me. I was like, oh.
Also, fast reflex, because you were sitting right next to him.
This is a little bit of my overall thing when, like, people flip out about, like, everything in college sports now or everything in society now. You know, maybe we're just getting old, but it's like, you know, oh, my God, Dabo Swinney yelled at a caller on the radio. Like, Like when I started in this business, like this, I watched John Chaney try to strangle John Calipari while I was a student newspaper reporter. Like press conferences were total mayhem. They weren't on TV. Now it's like live and be like, you have to behave yourself. Guys would yell at each other. Fights between the coach and the reporter were just constant. Mm-hmm. It'd only make national news if it was night. It was just like everybody's, it was so bait. It was just so ridiculous out there. And it's like, now it's like, oh my God, like, oh, relax. It's like, we go back to that, like the little brown jug, why they play the little brown jug in Minnesota and Michigan. It's because Michigan brought their own water because they, it was a Fielding Yost said Minnesota was poisoning theirs. Like that's how nuts this stuff was. So get over your like, so-and-so put an eye roll emoji on Twitter. Over, yeah, you know,
right. We're so whatever. Sensitive now.
Yeah, they're all sensitive. Yeah. Like, dude, they thought they were poisoning them. Bob Knight was liable. Like, yeah, he playfully smacked Sam Alford in the head. Does Bob Knight do anything playfully?
Yeah.
Bob Knight's a strong guy. He smacked in the back of the head Joby Hall.
Yes, he did. That was not playful.
On a sideline. It was not. It was a skirmish. They basically were, it was a almost fight, but I don't think Joby. And I no offense to Joe B, I wouldn't do it either. We wanted to fight him, but no. They were getting into it on the, and he smacked Joe B Hall, the Kentucky coach, in the back of the head, and Joe B was not happy with it. And Knight literally said, "This is what he said: if it was meant to be malicious, I would have blasted the MF-er into the seats." That was his post game. Now we're like, oh my God, what about this and that? And I'll play into it because I need the, you know, we need the listeners. But I mean, like that's, and everyone laughed and was like, yeah, Joe B, toughen up, you know, like, can you imagine? Now it's like that handshake was only 2.3 seconds. Analytics say a friendly one is 2.8.
Yes. It's a more sensitive world. That's for sure. Like so, Bob Knight. No, that's why there are not coaches like him now.
For the better, I will say. Like, you can't, he could not, everyone's like, well, he couldn't survive today. He couldn't survive then.
No, right. He got fired at Indiana.
Yeah.
Where he was an absolute hero.
I did a story in the column I wrote. I led with one of these things. It's like in 1971, he was coaching Army in the NIT. He got so irate at the officials, he tried to beat down their door of the referee locker room and got in trouble for that. Like, no, that wasn't allowed then either.
No,
but,
right.
You know, anyway, what a character. And it was everything with him. One of my others was, I remember he got in a fight with some dude at a Lubbock's, he was coaching Texas
Tech. Oh yeah,
Tech.
Salad bar.
He's at the salad bar. And I remember calling up one of his friends and be like, what do you think's up? You know, not good. He goes, that's pretty good. He was eating salad. We're pretty proud of him. it's like,
Yeah, but the confrontation. How about
that? Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Well, the confrontation is going to happen somewhere. Might as well be a salad bar. That's the confrontation will happen. So, one of a kind. Not saying we need more of them. It would never be able to succeed now. But I just think he was just a cultural force. You know.
Yes, absolutely.
So
that. Yeah, that's where the profundity of it came in, and I mean, I certainly didn't enjoy that interlude and several other interludes that, you know, that I was around and witnessed everything, but I'm sure glad I also got to cover him just to have experienced the phenomenon that is Bob Knight.
Yeah, me too. I had, I became somewhat close to him late in his career, certainly on a, you know, he would let me hang around, invited me to his golf out. He let me watch film with him. Practice, whatever. I was in pretty good standing, and there were still like five different flare-ups and problem. Yeah. The first time I went down there, he agreed to meet with me, and I went to Lubbock, and then he didn't. He refused to meet with me. I had gone all the way to Lubbock, and so I wrote this story, but I didn't rip him, and so then he liked me, sort of. But there'd still be stuff, and I'd be like, oh, why am I fighting with you?
Right.
Like, what is in this for me? Like, I'm not, you're not my coach. There's 300 and you're not coaching Indiana anymore. Then he one time he called me and apologized for blasting me for something. And I don't know. He was a very, very interesting guy. But I'm glad I got to cover him. I like characters. And you know, I'm not saying that you can do it that way, but he certainly was an eventful guy to cover. And we, our thoughts are with his family, certainly Pat and his sons and his wife and everybody and all his former players. Unique guy, Bob Knight. Outsized influence on it. All right, let's get to some football. And when we mean football, we mean spying. We mean spying. Okay, so last one, we tried to detail this Connor Stallions at Central Michigan sideline, and it's gotten a little crazier because Jim McElwain in Central Michigan are swearing that they had no idea that he was there or how he got there. Ross, do you believe that? What do you make of Connor Stallion on the sideline of this Central Michigan MSU game? I don't know how relevant it is in the big picture, but it's literally one of the funniest things I've ever, one of the funniest mysteries in the history of college sports. Like, what is, people are putting like, I'm getting like Photoshop, like him on the grassy knoll. And it's so fun. I mean, like, what in the world is this lunatic doing? And it has to be him because they've not identified anybody else who could have been him by now.
Right.
Pat said that like, it's been 12 hours. It's been like 3 days.
Yeah.
So it was him.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, the social media investigation. That's kind of what this, I believe, came out of is pictures, fans and whoever like posting photos online a couple of nights ago. Of him, and then you even had some using like Photoshop or whatever tools that you you use, where they overlay a picture of Stallions on the Michigan sideline, where we obviously know it's him, and they overlay it on this picture of this glasses wearing mustachioed guy on the Western or Central Michigan sideline, and it matches up perfect. Of course, like it matches up perfect, and then. And aside to all this is the sunglasses that he's wearing on the sidelines. First of all, it's a night game, right? We talked about that last time. But there's a little blue glare at the top corner of the glasses, the sunglasses. And they do make sunglasses now with a recording device in the top left corner with a little light. So now we've got the theory that he was recording the game from his glasses. And there's one video where, you know, the tackle's being taken into the sidelines toward him. And the first thing he does is kind of start to step back, as everybody would do when, grown men are coming at you, flying at you in pads. But he also grips his hat and tugs it down, you know, and looks down to the ground. Make sure that camera doesn't get anything. So it's fascinating. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that has anything to do with any of this, with the Michigan stuff. Maybe it does. Maybe there's some kind of tie-in here. But I just like the fact that we're talking again about photos involving Jim McElwain in if it's a person or if it's this person or that person, because we all know how the shark issue went a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it's possible on both occasions McElwain had nothing – like he was not the guy in the shark. Just an unfortunate thing. He didn't handle it well.
We know that.
And now he might be like, I don't know what the hell's going on behind me. I'm trying to coach the game. Poor Jim. Go ahead, Pat.
Oh, this is fascinating to me. And, you know, it may lead nowhere, but I don't think we can rule that out at this point. I have a million questions. There is 0% chance that nobody at Central Michigan was involved in this. How many people were involved? Who was involved? I don't know. But there is no freaking way Connor Stallions gets dressed in their gear for that night, gets the bench pass, and has carte blanche on the sidelines for whatever period of time without somebody at Central Michigan making it happen. That's a hill I'm dying on. First of all, I mean, a lot of questions here.
Pretty fair. It'd be hard for nobody to be like, who's that guy?
Yeah, right?
Right, and they go, oh, that's – because there are a million people on the sideline. There are, but not in that coaching box.
There are. Not in the box. Not in the box area. Yeah, for somebody, first of all, who is that guy? Secondly, did he walk in with the team, or did he just slink in after the team was there? Was he in the locker room before the game or at halftime? And if he was, that's, I've been in the visiting locker room, Michigan State. It is not a large space. You don't think somebody would have said, who's he at any point in time?
Good point.
You know, so somebody at Michigan State, I'm sorry, at Central Michigan was in on the scam. And if I am Michigan State, here's what I'm saying. Look, Chippewas, we paid you $1.75 million to come in here to spy on us on behalf of Michigan. Are you kidding me? Give us back the check or drop a dime on whoever is behind this. Because I would be so mad at Central Michigan if I were Michigan State. You're already mad at Michigan. You hate Michigan. And now your team that you paid to come into Spartan Stadium is helping Michigan against you? Oh, my God. I would just be fuming if I were the Spartans. So that's the backdrop to this. It has to be said, Jim McElwain was the wide receiver coach for Jim Harbaugh in 2018. Okay? There's a relationship there. There's other people on the staff at Central Michigan that worked at Michigan under Jim Harbaugh. Not saying Jim Harbaugh knew. I'm not saying Jim McElwain knew. But these are the questions that need to be asked and answered. And the lack of answers for Central Michigan are fairly damning at this point.
Yeah, I'm expecting Central to be pretty aggressive in this. I don't know. We'll see. I guess maybe not if it's like going to get them. But like they don't really have a dog in this fight. Like the administration, right? Although they may want to protect their coach. I don't know. Who knows? Here's my take from it. Connor Stallions, beyond, I'm agreeing with both of your points. I'm just adding a different point. Connor Stallions is an absolute lunatic.
Yes.
This is a not well person. Like, there is something off. If he wants to go to the Michigan State, Central Michigan game and scout and cheat and film the thing, right? Violate the rules. Just showing up is a clear violation of him. You might be able to be like, well, I'm sending my buddy to go. You know, maybe I wasn't thinking like, no, you know, you can't go to a game.
Right.
Like you just know. So just showing up is, but it's a 75,000 person stadium. This is not the hottest ticket in town. It's a Central Michigan game on Friday, September 1st. There were all sorts of places he could have sat in the stands and filmed the sideline a heck of a lot better than from the Central sideline. What exactly are you getting? Like the sideline's the worst place to watch a football game. We've all been on sideline, right?
Yes.
It's very hard to watch.
Yep.
He's trying to get caught. I don't mean like he's trying, but like somewhere in the back of his head, he's acting in such a reckless manner. It's like, it's going to blow up, or he's just being obnoxious in like, look what I can do. Because the plot of saying, I'm going to go steal Michigan State signs tonight, which again is comical at how bad everyone knew Michigan State would be, right? He is over the top aggressive. He's trying to steal all the money from the bank, right? It's like the bank robber that sticks around and starts asking the customer, you got 20 in your pocket? Give me that. His guy is wild because this makes no sense to sit there and say, I'm going to be so aggressive. I'm going to stand on the Central Michigan sideline. Like this is crazy. I refuse to believe that Jim, I do believe somebody at Central got him in there, but I cannot fathom that a head football coach, Jim McElwain, or Jim Harbaugh, however high this goes at Michigan, remains the single biggest thing we don't know, would ever be like, hey, that's a great idea on your plane. Like, you know what? Hey, Coach Harbaugh, I'm going to sneak onto the Central Michigan sidelines, or I can get a pass and I'm going to have a spy camera and I'm going to film from there. What do you think? Great idea, Connor. No, nobody. Even in that grad assistant room, which is like this is where people come up with 600 page manifestos on how they would do the job.
Right.
Would somebody be like, that's a great idea, dude. No, you'd be like, dude, just get in the last row and film it.
Yeah.
Go sit in the student section. They're all going to leave at like the second quarter because they want to go out. This guy is crazy.
Yes. Yes. No doubt about that. I mean, This is the most ridiculous scheme I've ever heard of. And look, we've covered college sports between the three of us a long time. That's saying something, because there's a ridiculous scheme going on all the time. And this is the capper.
I can't wait for the 30 for 30 on Mr. Stallions.
Oh, there will be one.
Yeah, Stallions is going to get a hell of a Netflix deal. Hell of a Netflix deal.
Be a big book deal.
Yeah, a hell of a Netflix deal. You know, call me Connor. Give me a for many reasons. Just want to call me.
Right. Yeah.
Just when things settle down. Just, you know, don't forget. Forget your friendly podcast. No, I just called him crazy. I mean, like, this is... The behavior is so insanely reckless. You're just like, I don't even know what to think. It's like, it's like that. You ever seen? I guess seen Wolf of Wall Street. Like at the end of the movie, you're like, what are you doing? Or like Goodfellas at the end, you're like, dude, just stop stop taking the coke while driving the car and speed. Like you're gonna get caught, man. Like at some point, you're like, what? This guy was not well. He was not well. Now that does not absolve Michigan from having a not well, just as an aside, I'm not sitting there saying, oh, well, therefore, no, that's not it. Or boy, he's doing it for a reason, but I think he is showing off. Like he is fired up about the concept of stealing for the sake of stealing. If he is on a sideline where he is easily caught by somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost feels like he thinks he's starring in his own movie, you know, like where, you know, you push everything to such a ridiculous degree, but you get away with it. And this is real life, though, man. It ain't working.
Yeah, didn't get away with it. Okay, ESPN reports Thursday about this conference call Wednesday that the Big Ten coaches had with Commissioner Tony Petitti. And Harbaugh got off the call so the other coaches could discuss there. I guess there was like an hour and a half call, but Harbaugh was on for the first half hour and then left while they all absolutely savaged him. Kind of awkward, but this would bother me. I don't know. Harbaugh seems to drift through the world like unaware. I'd be like, damn, this is tough. Anyway, it didn't take long for the details to leak. The coaches are fired up, yelling aggressively, basically raised voices, trying to get Petitti to do something, calling this whole thing fraudulent, complaining. They want the Big Ten to do a penalty of some sort or do something. Pat, your thoughts on this angry Big Ten coaches call? You know, just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say inevitable, maybe not in concert like this as a group, but I would imagine individually, at least those feelings have already been expressed, and now for them to do it as a group emphasizes that or reinforces that there's 13 other schools that feel like they've been taken advantage of here. And this puts the Big Ten between a rock and a hard place. I've written it a couple of times now that this is the one entity that reasonably maybe could be expected to do something. The NCAA, it's not going to happen fast enough. Michigan, come on. They're not going to nuke their own season here. It also stands the reason that the Big Ten doesn't want to nuke Michigan's season. There's like, you know, 26 million reasons why. If you can get multiple teams in the college playoff and this team could win a national championship and your league has only won one in the last 21 years. So it's a difficult position, but at the same time, you can't ignore the anger from within your conference. So you've got to listen to them. And I don't blame the coaches for being mad. I really don't. The line from the Big Ten has been, we have information, but we don't have facts. Well, I think there's enough facts here. I really do to be sure that Michigan was violating the rules in an attempt to gain a competitive advantage against the other schools in the league. So you can sit back and play the waiting game, which I think is what they will do because it's the most expedient thing to do. Not saying it's the right thing to do, but it's the most expedient thing to do and let this play out. And then after the season say, hey, you know what? We're going to levy these sanctions against Michigan. And Michigan's going to be like, fine, levy away, baby. And the rest of the school's going to be like, yeah, we figured that's the way you'd play it. But I don't blame them for weighing in heavily and hostilely.
Yeah, you know, not such a shocker that coaches are angry and complaining. Big surprise, right? I think this has probably been happening for several weeks. This one just obviously was, you know, on a group call. And let me say, you know, the coaches certainly aren't the only ones in the Big Ten, the only group complaining and wanting the league to do something, right? Athletic directors met last week in the Big Ten and discussed this issue. And I think maybe not as fiery as the coaches, but there was a sentiment of something probably needs to be done. You know, I mean, information on that call didn't necessarily leak out. And it sounds like the coaches' call was, you know, more fired up as coaches can be. So I think there's another AD call, you know, by the time this posts, probably there could be more information, you know, from the Big Ten, or I think there's going to be an AD call later today about the issue and another one. And I don't know what the Big Ten does. It's a really tough spot because they don't have some kind of investigative arm. They don't have investigators to do some thorough investigation. And, you know, you don't want to be too heavy with some kind of penalty. It's a tough spot. And I think most commissioners, I've talked to a few commissioners, like, what would you do if you were in his position? And most, you know, would say, you got to let the NCAA do its job. You know, you got to let the NCAA do its investigation and do its job. My big question is, and I talked to a few former NCAA investigator type people to try to understand the process a little more. But my big question is, can the NCAA, if this thing is accelerating a little bit, this investigation, if they finish with the investigation in the middle of November or late November, even before the season, can they turn over their findings, the NCAA, to the Big Ten, and then the Big Ten make some kind of decision based on the findings of the NCAA? The NCAA couldn't levy penalties because, you know, there's a whole process that the school gets 90 days to respond, blah, blah, blah. It's a back and forth that lasts several months. But can the Big Ten make a decision based on the NCAA's findings if it is an accelerated investigation? And that I think, is kind of the interesting question.
They can if they want to get sued into oblivion. now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but that if the NCAA breaks protocol in any way, or the Big Ten veers from their whatever protocols they have, that's a tough one. Look, it's a brutal spot that the Big Ten is in here. What do you do? If you sat there and said, we're not going to make you eligible for the championship game, or we're going to suspend a coach based on right now allegations. Okay. Do we think this stuff? Yeah, pretty sure some stuff happened, but it's allegations. You are opening Pandora's box. It is an absolute nightmare going forward. And you go, well, this is a unique case, and this is getting a lot of attention. Everyone's angry. What happens when something else goes down? What happens when a chain gang screws up? What happens when a ball that's not properly inflated gets used in a game? Do you suspend? What happens when we can't even fathom? You couldn't have fathomed this, right?
Right.
You do not want to be in the position where you are not presenting due process. Jerry Tarkanian beat the NCAA for $2.5 million, which was a lot now, but it was a lot of money at the Supreme Court on this. You have to give some due process on this thing. It as much as it might feel good, or it would calm down. I'm sure the ADs are getting screamed at by their head coach. No coach in the country has ever lost a game fairly or lost a recruit fairly, right? So like, their opinions on this really don't matter to me. And these lunatics, if you really think the Big Ten, we're going to get Tony Petitti to do this, you know what the best possible move is after this meeting to convince Tony Petitti that he should suspend him? We're going to humiliate him by leaking all the details of the call.
And within like an hour of the call ending. I mean, the call ended last night like at 9 o'clock, and the story was up
five
at like 11.
Sources, Pete.
Yeah,
then.
I mean,
right.
It was quick.
Hey, let's all call ESPN and tell them what was on the call and make the commissioner look like a feckless loser who doesn't care about the integrity of football. These guys are nuts. Okay, they're all nuts. They all try, and this is just a part of this. I'm not taking away from the severity of what goes on. It's just like, every person in college athletics tries to gain an edge and or cheat in every single way. And so it's like, okay, I get it. This was, yeah, Connor Stallions, yeah. But like, relax. Like we said, they were poisoning the water 100 years ago. They were doing it. Like, okay, guys, relax. All right, never heard of such a thing. If he had, if Harbaugh's defense is true, a month ago, Harbaugh would have been like, I never heard of anything like that. Like, I honestly do not believe Jim Harbaugh, like, signed off on Connor Stallions sneaking onto the Central Michigan sidelines. Right? No one's ever heard of such a thing because it's total lunacy. But like, relax. Coaches complaining anonymously. Put your name on it, man. If you're not putting your name on it, they of course they're going to grandstand. Of course they're going to say, I mean, you know who benefits the most from all this being tainted? The coaches that lost to Michigan, because they'll be like, well, exactly. The reason we lost. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, things happen in football games. Things happen. Pat, you and I were at a game 2 weeks ago. Penn State went 0-15 on third down. I don't think it's because Ohio State was cheating. It's just they did it. And even if they were, I don't care. It's like things happen in football games. But all of a sudden, if there's a little bit on, let's say this was Ohio State, well, that's why we went 0-15 on third down. It wasn't because we kept running right into the – like you can come up with all sorts of stuff. And so it's like, all right, guy, you know, anonymous coaches, whatever. Ripping the commissioner anonymously, basically. I mean, this is a terrible story for Tony Battiti.
Yes, bad strategy. Bad strategy.
What are you people doing? It's just sort of like, stop your whining. All right. Like, I'm not minimizing it, but like everyone else's behavior is just like, oh my God, come on now.
Yeah. No, and the Big Ten is feeling the heat. I guarantee it. And they know they've got to say something. But I don't know what they say, and I don't know when, and I don't know what they do, more importantly. I don't think there's a do anything. But if you are, let's just say Ohio State or Penn State or whatever, and you want the Big Ten to do something, this is not going to help your cause by publicly putting the commissioner on the griddle. Like, I put him on the griddle to a degree in my column on Monday. And the Big Ten didn't like that, but I'm not part of the damn league, you know? If you are part of the league, this was probably not very good strategy.
Not a good strategy. Not a good strategy. But, I think that there's such a Pandora's box that you have. Maybe I mentioned it last time. It's like when the NCAA punished Penn State for the Jerry Sandusky scandal. Everyone was fired up about Jerry Sandusky. It was horrible, and it's a lot worse than, you know, people are like, well, this is way worse than giving a guy, $100. Well, of course, but at some point you got to be like, listen, we're not in this role. Like, right. I kind of like the college football playoff rule. Like, hey man, we ain't touching this. We ain't investigating.
Yeah, that was right. Smart and predictable from them. It's like we are backpedaling like Deion Sanders.
We're just going to be like, that's not our thing. And you suspend in the middle of the season. What happens? What happens to one of these coaches when something happens? And you go, well, it won't be as bad as this. It doesn't have to be. It could be a little bit bad.
Right.
And well, then, you should get a quarter of the penalty then. This is they don't think long term. I get their frustration. Clearly, there's an advantage gained. Whatever the final verdict is, the NCAA should apply the punishments that should be applied, 100%. But it's a tough spot right now. All right, we are running long. Race for the case will be quick. We wanted to get this one more story. It is the last weekend of the CBS, SEC on CBS doubleheader. The last SEC-CBS. Ross has a great story on Yahoo Sports about this. The end of this partnership that really benefited both places. I thought CBS elevated game presentation and branded the SEC as a national league with that 3:30 Eastern Time Saturday afternoon game, better than anybody else, the theme song, the whole thing. And that the games are still gonna be on. This will be on ESPN. Big Ten will be on SEC and all that. But what would you want people to take away from your story, Ross?
Yeah, SEC or the CBS first aired an SEC game in 1996, Florida and Tennessee in Neyland Stadium. So it's been 27 years of SEC on CBS and roughly 24 years of SEC exclusively on CBS and getting that exclusive window, which remains like, I think, the only network exclusive window in college football for one league every week. And then, of course, that will move to ABC. So CBS and the SEC, kind of this long marriage, had some rocky times, and then kind of ended in divorce. And not just a normal divorce, one that will see CBS partner with the Big Ten and probably pay more for games in the Big Ten than actually they may have for the A package in the SEC. It's all fascinating. So it gets into the CBS-SEC drama and the rocky kind of relationship that really began about a decade ago when the SEC expanded with A&M in Missouri and CBS didn't give pro rata shares, didn't give any more money. And it just kind of went up and down, and it gets into a little bit the latest negotiations and why CBS came, or ESPN came out, ESPN ABC came out ahead. You know, another whole part of it is this SEC Big Ten, right, situation, the kind of the Cold War between these two entities. And now CBS, an SEC partner for 27 years, will be airing a Big Ten game, probably a secondary game, at 3:30 in their normal time with the same theme music in, at least next year, the same announcers that did the SEC while competing against the SEC's top game at 3:30 on ABC. It's all pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I tell you, it was a double take at Big Ten Media Day when you see Gary Danielson there, and he's on the podium, and it's like, whoa, all right, times really are changing here. Because even though he played at Purdue, grew up in the Midwest, he's been symbolic of the CBS-SEC partnership for a long time. And by a lot of people was mocked as basically an SEC homer. And now all of a sudden, whoa, he's in with the Big Ten. So fascinating run. Craig Silver, the longtime producer at CBS, did a great job with the SEC package forever. And will do well with the Big Ten as well. But it's a pretty big media shift, that's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely be a little jarring when you see those things online of the Big Ten and all that. But I do think there was, you know, obviously the money wasn't there. They could have renegotiated and given the SEC more money, and the SEC just is fair to go get as much money as they want to get. And I think changing times, but the SEC benefited for a long time with that CBS deal. I don't know going forward how important one network and one time slot will be. I just think TV habits are changing so dramatically. But man, it meant something to get under that 3:30 game. And I don't really recall any other. It's a little like, maybe it's not as important anymore, but you know how it used to be in the NFL, if you could get that Monday Night Football spot, you know, it meant something to teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that a lot more games are national, Sunday night's actually bigger, but like, you know, like, okay, Alabama's going to be on, LSU, all that. But like, if an Arkansas is playing well and all of a sudden they're like, we're going to show the Arkansas, Alabama, you know, like it meant something big, right? It was like Saturday afternoon, you watched SEC football. And yeah. I don't know if you'll ever quite get that back. All right. Race for the case.
Yes.
Sean, 30
games.
30. Hey, football games. So far, the only game I think we discussed was Michigan State, Central Michigan, which an unlikely game to become a focus of the entire country.
Yeah. It was played September 1st.
I watched it.
Yeah, I did.
Central stuck in there for a while. Yeah, stuck in there. Anyway.
But then Connor's work tipped the
Connor, it must have been Connor. Well, yeah. It would have been helping the Spartans. Spartans took over late.
Oh, right. Yeah. Never mind. Sorry. No, Wrong theory.
Wrong theory. Come up with a different theory. All right. Sean, 31-23. Ross, 29-25. I have my return to prominence. I am closing. I wouldn't call it secretary because he led wire to wire, but I am closing. Like one of Pat's good horse races, like Wetzel the horse. 28-26. Okay. I was like 10 games under 500. Now I'm at 28-26. Respectable. And I'm three out of the lead. Pat 40, 23-31. Good work.
Woof.
getting better.
And he tries getting to better. Get me to define respectable.
I was just waiting for you to give an actual number.
Well, let me give you
I'm
the
getting better.
Let me give you the antonym of respectable. 23, 31, and 3. That would that is not respectable. I'll define that. All right, number 23, Kansas State at number 7, Texas. We talked about these games. If you want to hear about these games, go back to the Tuesday or the Sunday. We talked a lot of the Big 12 on earlier this week, two shows ago. We talked a lot of SEC last show. So don't get on us because there's no football. We do talk football. We just don't always talk it right here. Kansas State at number 7, Texas. Texas is giving just 4 points. Game is noon on Fox. Go ahead there, Mr. Respectable. What you got?
It's a hard pick, I think. It's a difficult game, but I love the way K-State is playing. They're on a bit of a roll. They've won, I think, 3 straight. They've dominated the last 2. They're physical enough, I believe, to match up with Texas, and Texas is still playing Malik Murphy, backup quarterback. He's a good backup, but I'm not sure he's a difference maker, so I'm going to take K-State and the 4. I think they either win outright or lose by a field goal. Give me the Wildcats.
Agree. Yeah. Kansas. I kind of expect actually Kansas State not just to cover the 4, but to win the game, upset Texas and Austin. They've outscored their last 3 opponents 120-24 on a roll. Texas, no starting quarterback, right? No Quinn Ewers. We've seen Texas struggle, right? They struggled earlier in the season to put BYU away. They never could put Oklahoma away. They struggled against Houston. I think they struggle again enough that Kansas State gets them.
With all the other conferences acting up, you would expect it to be taking place again here with Kansas State beating Texas. I'm not giving them that yet. I'll take Texas covering the 4.
I hate agreeing with Pat when I just read off his record, but here's the thing. I feel like this spread is like the Vegas has no faith in Texas, but they know if they go like get this thing down to 1 or 2, the Longhorn fans are going to pound it and they're going to lose big. I just don't know about their ability to score. Kansas State getting 4. I'm going to take that. It's a little terrifying though. I'll take every man a Wildcat on that one. Number 12, Missouri at number 2, Georgia in the boring old SEC that doesn't have anyone fighting with anyone. Too much mutual respect down there. Georgia's giving 15.5. Ugh, torturous spread number. 15.5, 3:30 on CBS, as we mentioned. Ross.
Yeah, 15.5. God, it's just a huge spread. Even though, you know, 2-time reigning champions are at home, you got a 7-1 team coming in Mizzou, and I've not been good with Georgia this year. I'm sure this is going to go poorly again. I picked him to pick Florida to cover, and that didn't happen, not even close. Early in the season, I think I whiffed on spreads with Kentucky and others that they played. They continue to blow out teams I don't necessarily expect, which I'm sure will happen here, but either way, I'm going to pick Missouri and hope that at least late in the game they keep it within 15 points. So give me Missouri to cover.
I'm going to take the dogs. When you put a number next to their opponent, a ranked team, in other words, they pay attention. And when they have paid attention this year and been locked in, they've crushed teams. That's exactly 2 times. Kentucky and Florida. Florida wasn't ranked, but it's Florida. It's a rival. And people were starting to doubt them because of the Bowers injury. I think Carson Beck is really coming into his own. Ladd McConkey is healthy. I think Georgia will win by, let's say, 17.
I could see either happening, which makes this a truly diabolical spread. Mizzou could come out and really give them a game. Georgia could say, hey, we're still Georgia. It's running through us. And I think that they will stick to the narrative of poor Georgia. Look at us. They ranked us 2 and not 1, and they will try to reassert themselves. I'll take Georgia to cover.
Mizzou ain't played nobody, Paul. They did beat Kansas State. I'm taking Georgia. Missouri gave up a lot of points to LSU. They gave up a lot of points to Kansas State. 15.5 is painful because it's backdoor cover, just hanging there.
Yep.
You're not going to feel easy all day until that final gun, but I'm going to take it. I'm willing to take that on. That's the burden I'm willing to bear. Go Dogs. Bedlam, number 9, Oklahoma, at number 22, Oklahoma State. Bosworth is a +400 or -400 favorite. If he and Gundy fight, actually -10,000. Gundy was going to fight, was it Tom Herman?
Side,
you called him all mullet, no muscle. Yeah.
Yeah.
No offense, Mike. None of us could beat up the Boz, but they probably won't fight. Anyway, there'll be a game. OU giving 5.5, 3:30 on ABC. It will be a venomous Stillwater. T Boone picking State. T Boone was a nice old man. The crowd in T Boone and their 6-inch sidelines. All the open space in Oklahoma, the sweeping plains of Oklahoma. They built a stadium where the sideline is 6 inches wide. Connor Stallion couldn't even sneak into this place.
Yeah, he'd have a tough time.
It's the weirdest thing. Somebody is going to get impaled on one of that brick wall. But anyway, that's an aside. Build a bigger stadium. Come on, T-Boone. 3:30 on ABC. Pat.
Oh, this is a fascinating one to me. And we talked about on the last podcast, kind of the death of that tradition of that game. Stinks, and I expect a extremely inspired crowd, as Dan mentioned. Oklahoma State is hot. That's a hot team. They've won 4 straight. Ollie Gordon II now leading the nation in rushing, 550 yards the last 2 games. Put him in the Heisman discussion, especially after Saturday when they beat Oklahoma. They cover easily in this game. I like the Cowboys here, big time.
Same, yeah. How about running back Ollie Gordon, 271 yards rushing last week, 282 the week before, 168 the week before, 136, 121. Incredible. So give me the Cowboys and Ollie Gordon to run all over the Sooners, cover and win.
If somebody told me that the Giants and the Eagles were playing for the last time ever at the link, I have to put everything on the home team, Oklahoma State. They're going to roll. It's going to be madness. Very excited for this one. Cowboys cover.
This year you could play Eagles, Giants, and Barrow, Alaska, and I would put all of it on the Eagles. But, yeah, I agree with your sentiment. This will be a fired up Pokes team. I like Oklahoma State in this if I'm getting these points. It's just enough to entice me. Vegas, you tantalizingly evil people. Number 5.
For the record, last week we all went Utah at home against Oregon, and we got smoked. Yeah. So if we're all going Oklahoma State here, beware.
Yeah. Beware of everything. Yeah. Number 5, Washington at number 20, USC.
Beware of a
glasses wearing, hat wearing, mustachioed man. Someone, he might pop up behind your bed, like, in your closet. Connor Stallions.
How many years has Oklahoma and Oklahoma State been playing football against each other? Like 100 years?
They played
or something,
first time in 1904.
Okay. So since 1904 to now, these two schools, they got nothing to do but hate each other. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I guess Oklahoma's got time to hate Texas too, but Oklahoma State, like, yeah. You tell me no one snuck into the other stadium to scout? Somebody did. I'm not saying it minimizes anything, but, you know, this is exactly what they would do. Although Michigan, it is the Egg Bowl. It is the Southern Egg Bowl, a Midwest Egg Bowl. Mm-hmm. We're just crazy enough. Anyway, number 5, Washington. They're well-adjusted people out there in Seattle. At number 20, USC. Washington giving 3. 7:30 on ABC. Ross, your turn.
I'm going to say that USC wins again, but neither one of these teams are playing great. We've seen them struggle. I mean, USC should have lost a 3rd straight game. Washington very well could have lost to both Arizona State and Stanford. Not playing well. So I'm going to just go with the home team here, and I'm going to say that USC is not just going to cover, but I think they knock off Washington. And lo and behold, we have no more undefeated team in the Pac-12.
My stat of the week USC has given up 213 points in the last five games. It's the most they've ever given up in school history across five games. That's how bad that defense is. They gave up 49 to Cal and won. Michael Penix and his receivers get well after being shaky the last couple weeks and strafe USC's defense, and Washington wins and covers.
I'd love to overthink this one. I currently am. And it just says, here comes the cannibalization. Here, let's just send off the Pac-12 as it should. But I'll take Washington and try to go against my best interest.
I'm terrified. I keep picking with Pat, but he's correct. Look at Penix, L.A., Heisman sitting there, prime time. This defense can't stop anybody. Your offense is really, really good once you get it going. It's going to be a much easier game than the last couple. And, the Coliseum crowd probably will not either be as large or as enthused as a front runner town. I like Washington in this game. Three isn't enough. Huskies win and cover. All right, number 14, LSU at number 8, Alabama. Crimson Tide given 3, 7:45 Eastern Time, CBS. Pat.
Always great when these two play. Love it at night. Either stadium, Bryant-Denny or Tiger Stadium, you feel the intensity. Both a little bit flawed, LSU defensively, Alabama offensively. I'm going to take the home team. I'm going to take the revenge angle here after losing an OT. I am down with Alabama. I'm impressed with how they have recovered from the early start to the season. Give me the Tide -3.
Yeah, the Tide are rolling. Playing pretty solid defensively, and the offense still has questions. I don't necessarily trust them consistently, but LSU has big enough holes defensively that I think Alabama can exploit it and score enough. But this could be – this has the makings to me of actually a pretty, like, ugly kind of crazy high-scoring game, because I think Jaden Daniels of LSU could find some holes in Alabama's defense as well. But I think in the end, Alabama wins and covers the 3.
I'm going to take a flyer on the better quarterback here, and that is Daniels at LSU. It's just such a huge risk on the road, especially at Alabama at night. I don't love it, but I just have to stick with at least one principle, and I'll go with better quarterback, LSU to cover.
I love Jaden Daniels, but I'm not betting against Crimson Tide. I've learned this lesson. When in doubt, bet with Nick Saban, home. Taking Alabama in this game, but looking forward to it, no doubt. All right, I'm terrified. I think I'm 5-for-5 with Pat. Pat, we're going to turn you around this week.
I was turned around. I was 4-2 last week. Come on.
All right. Turned around. Yeah, it's not really a heater per se, but okay.
It's as close as I can get to
That's
a heater.
Respectable.
It's a lukewarmer. I'll take it.
All right. Well, give us a lock of the week if you're so hot. What do you got?
Okay, I will. After being victimized by Connor Stallions, I think Michigan State is in the tank. Really? I'm sorry. Michigan State's been in the tank. They've been bad the last couple games, really since they blew the lead against Rutgers. Nebraska has something to play for. They got the Big Ten West race they're still in. They've got a chance to go to a bowl game for the first time in a long time. Matt Rhule he's doing what he does. He's a gradual builder and improver, and they're gradually building and improving. They're laying 3 in what should be a morose Spartan Stadium. Cornhuskers win and cover the 3.
I could not be a bigger believer in that game than that. I 100% agree. I don't know how that's only 3 points. Anyway, I'm not picking
Miami Hurricanes must watch TV this year. Must watch, no matter who they're playing. They had the kneel down issue a month ago. Last two games have gone into overtime, and Mario Cristobal has played for overtime in the last two games, basically, and won. They play at NC State, and they are a 4.5-point favorite in the game. I think this is probably where things fizzle on the road at the Wolfpack. I think the Wolfpack covers the 4.5 and wins and knocks out Miami basically from the championship race in the ACC.
I'm going to go in state here. JMU giving 5.5 to Georgia State. JMU has been one of the sneaky, most interesting teams given their bowl ineligibility since moving up to the FBS. I believe that they're going to keep playing hard, try to keep on getting as many wins, force their hand, go to court, lose that battle. They should throw their own bowl, call it the JMU Bowl, play UCF and try to get them from a couple years ago, the old national champs. The T-shirt sales, the hat sales would go bonkers. They need to do this for the sport. You got to respect the contract at the end of the day, but they're going to keep winning games and keep covering, which is even more important. So JMU giving 5.5.
There's a theory. I love it.
Go JMU. They're suing. They're trying attorney generals. They got everyone involved. It's a well-adjusted sport we got here. So Ole Miss just giving 3 against Texas A&M. It's very appealing. Texas A&M on the road, I have no faith in. I don't, but I'm not going to pick that game. I'm going to pick, but that'd be my other choice. I really like Michigan State losing. I won on them last week, falling apart. I would keep going with that until the spread. I'm going to take New Mexico State giving 3 at home against Middle Tennessee State. New Mexico State is 6-3. They probably could be 7-2. Pretty good team. We've talked about them a few times. Jerry Kill's got going down there. They're at home. The second straight bowl season they're going with. They got a lot of momentum. I think they're going to have a good crowd. I think everyone's fired up down in Las Cruces. I don't know what Middle Tennessee State has done to merit a 3-point. They're losing, lost last week by a touchdown at Liberty. That's, I guess, their best result maybe. But I'm taking New Mexico State to cover this game. Also a note, I think at one point, the Iowa Northwestern game was under 30
the total.
It's now 30.5. We'll see now that a Booster Foundation Memorial Fund offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz is whatever it's gonna be. Anyway, we'll see. I'm taking New Mexico State.
I think your pick has been influenced by the free whiskey. You're not under the influence of the whiskey right now, but the free whiskey from New Mexico State is influencing you.
The last
pick.
Thing they sent me were cans of Aggie margaritas.
Well, okay, that's the something. Influence.
They're called the Aggie Ritas. They're tremendous. they do have great alcohol. New Mexico State, if this football thing, it's working out, but if it ever didn't, they could just be a alcohol distributor. Maybe it is. But you know what? At this point, this pick would not be anything near the most absurd thing to happen in college football this week. So I feel all right about it. I'm not wearing these glasses enough, secret cameras. I'm good. I got scouts. No. Anyway, that's our show. Sure, it ran long again, but whatever. Please come back on Sunday. We will have a recap of all of this. If you're new to the show, we do 3 a week. Continue to share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We appreciate all of our loyal listeners. Subscribe, all of that. Leave us nice reviews, and we will talk to you later.